The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Signal Hour, where I and Evie spend a lot of time digging through the noise to see if we can find the signal to make sense of this crazy world that we live in right now. And it is crazy and getting crazier. Hi, Evie. How are you feeling about things?
I'm feeling great. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us on this hot and sultry Wednesday afternoon here. On the East Coast, wherever you're dialing in from. Yeah, over here, it is very warm.
Very warm.
Very warm.
Hence the lighter attire today for me. going with that. Today, we are going to be talking about a lot of things. Obviously, we got to go through the Israel, Iran, and U.S. bombing stuff very quickly, see where we are and how that all sorted out. New York City is getting Londonized. It's about to. We're going to talk about that. And maybe we talk about Jacinda Ardern's creepiness, which we were going to talk about last time, but didn't quite get to. But this time we might, or we might not. And it might be a signal hour and a half. You never
She's
know.
She's not a priority, okay?
All right. So let's start here, Evie, with this. You know, this consumed a lot of our week, like it did for a lot of people, trying to figure out what the heck went on over there. And I still don't know that I know, but we're going to go through some of the data. And by the way, it's very hot up and down the entire East Coast. So thanks, Michelle, knowing it's hot there in Kentucky, too.
I'm sorry it's so sticky, everybody. It makes me appreciate the things that we have, like air conditioning. We have one in our bedroom, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. I envy people that have air conditioning throughout their entire houses, but that's okay. Imagine how our ancestors used to live, right?
Well, exactly.
They had it rough.
Exactly. Not as rough as the people up in Alaska, I guess. So.
Listening from the Alaskan wilderness. Howdy, everybody. Blessings Welcome. From, wow, so many places.
Yeah, we got the prairie region of big old Texas.
Yeah, Texas.
And hey, it's nice in Los Angeles. That's why people live there.
Yeah.
That's why they live there.
Anybody from outside the United States? I'm curious about that.
Well, yeah, this person, Milford, Connecticut. That's like
Oh boy.
All right. So let's get back to this.
Let's do this.
Let's do this. All right. So we talked about this last time on June 12th. Israel, I still have the same spelling error in the title. Israel. Attacked Iran totally without provocation. They say, well, you know, they just like we had to for our because we had to, you know, exigent, imminent nuclear threat. And it turned out the United States government knew nothing about it, but then did know something about it. And back and forth. And next thing you know, missiles are flying hither and yon. And by the way, Evie, So here's what we learned. We learned some things. We've learned that Iran can build missiles that hit things from very far away, but not just far away, but they hit them really fast.
So scary.
I mean, look at this. So we know this is supersonic, at least. We don't know if it's hypersonic because see how it arrives soundlessly? You would think you would hear it, like, because you're used to hearing things that travel like, subsonic, right? So you hear, like, the plane coming or something. But this is what it looks like when a 50 BMG round is inbound and headed towards you. You don't hear it. The sound comes after the fact.
Yikes.
Right? So that's why it's such a weird thing to see something that large traveling that covering that much distance, traveling that fast with no sound until it hits, right?
Right. Yeah. So you're actually hearing the sound of the things that it destroys.
Well, once it blows
moment.
Up, you hear that part. So anyway, that's what we learned. We learned that Israel was, its Iron Dome did not really perform as advertised. It took out some of the slower stuff, but every one of these fast ones I saw travel, they seemed to make it through the defenses. And then along the way, in response, the United States bombed the nuclear facilities in Iran. And so this is the only picture any of us have. There's some satellite photos, there's some holes in the ground, and everybody's sort of making claims based on all of that, right? Mm-hmm. So what do we really know? What do we really know? Well, not a lot. Here's what we know, Evie. We know that Donald J. Trump came out and declared mission accomplished. This just came out just this morning, even. He's like, he says.
Donald Trump said, based on everything we have seen, and I've seen it all, our bombing campaign obliterated Iran's ability to create nuclear weapons. Our massive bombs hit exactly the right spot at each target and worked perfectly. The impact of those bombs is buried under a mountain of rubble in Iran. So anyone who says the bombs were not devastating is just trying to undermine the president and the successful mission, Hegseth told the outlet.
Right. So what's happening here is there's a little bit of he said, she said going on. Now here's the thing. The United States is not, nobody has offered us anything other than this satellite photo. We don't have any other pictures. We don't have any other reports. We don't have any, like, they haven't even hinted. They're like, well, our, you know, we have some undercover agents there, which I guess they would never say, but they right. haven't said we have seen direct firsthand knowledge pictures of the obliterated stuff. Because this is what we're looking at with these holes, is this is the Fordo site that is under variably 100 to 200 feet of rock, depending on who's telling us the story. And so that's a lot to go through.
Yeah.
And maybe the bunker buster bombs made it all the way down. Maybe they didn't. We don't know. We just don't know. But so we have this story, right?
Right.
And then, you know, Trump brokered this peace deal, the ceasefire, not a peace deal. Peace deals actually have words and signatures. He got a phone call and he said that they had gotten secured a ceasefire. But then this happened. He said,
Israel, do not drop those bombs.
It's all caps, so you know he's serious.
If you do, it's a major violation. Bring your pilots home now. Donald J. Trump, president of the United States. So he's tweeting this out.
Yes.
As a message, hoping it gets to the right person.
So the ceasefire happened, right? He declared it had happened. Mm-hmm. But it was a weird ceasefire because they said, oh, well, you know, we have 12 hours from this moment. So what happened was Israel was busy, like, dropping bombs right up to the 11th hour and 59th minute, like lots, like the biggest bombing stuff they'd ever done. So why would you declare a ceasefire in the future, right? Mm. And then Israel lobbed some stuff back, but one of the missiles was just a little outside of the window, just a little tiny bit outside of the window. So Israel said, oh, we're sending some jets over. And that's when Donald J. Trump, instead of picking up the phone, tweets. This is how your president communicates to the world. He tweets, which is now statecraft, involves sending out all caps tweets. All right.
This has never happened before in my lifetime.
Well, so he does that. And then this happens. This is what happened exactly next after that.
Oh, BB, F you, Trump. Explosions, more explosions ring out in Tehran despite Trump's order to Israel to stop strikes.
Dude, an all cap mean tweet did not get the job done. They decided to continue bombing anyway, which was BB saying, oh no, we're anyway. So things were getting a little dicey.
Yeah, it's getting spicy here.
But that's when, and I can't believe this isn't AI generated, but this is real.
Okay.
This is a real clip here. And so this is Trump responding to everything we just talked about right there.
Yeah, I do. They violated it, but Israel violated it too.
Are you questioning
Israel, as soon as we made the deal, they came out and they dropped a load of bombs, the likes of which I'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest load that we've seen. I'm not happy with Israel. You know, when I say, okay, now you have 12 hours, you don't go out in the first hour and just drop everything you have on them. So I'm not happy with them. I'm not happy with Iran either. But I'm really unhappy if Israel's going out this morning because the one rocket that didn't land, that was shot, perhaps by mistake, that didn't land. I'm not happy about that. You know what? We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Do you understand that?
Whoa.
So I'm taking it you hadn't heard that quote before.
I have not.
Yeah, I saw your reaction there. I saved this one for you.
Thank you.
To get an authentic reaction.
I love when
reaction.
You spring things on me.
You know, we both know that. but that's pretty, I mean, listen, we're not used to hearing a president talk like that, but that's part of the Trump aura, right? He's very mad. He's just communicated that to Bibi Netanyahu, and he's really putting Israel on notice here. And this is a first. I've never heard a president take Israel to task for anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's now happened. So this is all here. We don't know a lot about what's happened in this overall story, right? So
right.
Let me rewind. None of this would have happened. We didn't almost approach World War III if Israel hadn't bombed Iran to begin with.
Yeah.
And they did it in a very targeted way. And we learned some things. One, they took out a lot of the senior leadership of the military. They took out a lot of scientists, right? It was very targeted. So obviously they penetrated Iran and Mossad and whatever the Palantir system is they mm-hmm. use to identify who's where. Like, that works really well. So everybody just learned that. Like, every country that's not a moron just
right,
figured
was
out.
Paying attention and went, ooh. Oh.
Second thing we learned, Trump was mid-negotiation with Iran, and one of the people that Israel took out was the chief negotiator on the night before they were supposed to go.
I heard that.
To have more negotiations. So we also learned, the rest of the world has learned, oh, these guys negotiate in bad faith.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would anybody come back to the negotiating table if it turns into a literal Game of Thrones red wedding?
Exactly.
Scenario.
Yeah, that's what you called it. I think that's accurate.
Yeah. So we learned that. But then the next thing that we learned was that Iran was not nearly as toothless as maybe hoped. I think Israel finally went up against a what we would say a non-permissive foe, somebody who was capable of punching back. And boy, they did punch back. And I think that the direction things were going, Israel was only a number of weeks away from complete economic shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of damage was being done.
Right.
And they were going to lose a war of attrition because apparently
they were out of things to send over to Iran, is what I had heard. Like, if we hadn't stepped in any way, they would have been all done.
Well, I mean, they probably have a lot of bombs. I don't know if they would have run out of bombs, but they were running out of interceptors. So they had these Arrow missiles and THAAD, the THAAD missiles that could intercept. And so Iran, of course, played a very smart game of cat and mouse. They would send over all their older stuff of like regular missiles, and they would shoot all their expensive stuff. And then you saw those fast ones come in on the back end of that whole thing. Now, apparently, I don't know if this is true. Everything's rumor and hearsay, but Iran could build 12 of those missiles a day. And if you just shot 12 a day, here's what happens. You shoot 12 a day, you pace them out. So all of Israel basically spends all day underground in air raid shelters, not doing economic things.
Right.
And over time, you wreck the country.
You just cripple their economy.
Just cripple it.
Yeah.
Right. And as well, Iran never targeted. They only 90% of Israel's water comes from 4 desalination plants. They didn't target those. Because that would have been a dick move.
That would have been inhumane.
Would have been a dick move. But so at any rate, so Israel sent over, this was the last one. They sent over their planes and they bombed one last thing. Turned out just they had to get the last word in. Fine. So I think that's the end of it.
I hate those kind of people.
I have to have the last word. But it seems over because both countries have opened up their civilian airspace and I haven't heard of anything going off in the last 24 hours. So. Hopefully this is a done deal, but
that would be good.
We're gonna have to see. Now the question is, well, what was actually accomplished? What happened here? What happened?
Well, according to CNN, they said early U.S. intel suggests American strikes did not destroy Iran's nuclear sites and likely only set the program back by months, sources say.
Now this is interesting because now sources say, so excuse me. Let's look at this. New York Times also reported this and classified findings. So somebody leaked out classified findings. The Trump administration not happy about this at all. And so indicate the attack maybe sealed off entrances, but didn't collapse the underground building. So mission not accomplished. So New York Times, CNN running hard with this. Trump administration very unhappy with that.
Right.
Very unhappy.
Right.
We're going to find out who leaked this, but these were presented as classified findings. Okay. And then here we have this, which is the special envoy, Steve Witkoff, says it's all this junk here.
Says that breaking, Trump special envoy Steve Witkoff says whoever is leaking the Trump Iran strike intel to CNN to fuel fake news reporting is committing treason.
Whoops.
It's treasonous. It ought to be investigated. Whoever is responsible for it should be held accountable. Find them, fire them, and prosecute. There's no doubt it was obliterated, Witkoff said.
Yeah, so he's like totally, definitely mission accomplished, but trust me, bro. he didn't provide any more data. Like, hey, here's some new photos.
Right.
Here's some more intel.
Here's how we know.
It's just a declarative statement that says, hey, this stuff got totally, totally destroyed. And I have no more trust in anybody in the government. Trump, otherwise, it doesn't matter to me. It's like, look, I'm turned into Mr. Missouri State. Show me. They're not showing us. So we have to take him at their word. But now it's kind of a he said, she said. For my mind, you know, you have to present real evidence that it was actually mission accomplished. Now, here's the problem. It turned out that Iran shot a bunch of missiles at U.S. bases in Qatar at the Doha military base. But they told us they were going to. So we moved took all our planes away. No after action. Pictures have been released. So I have no idea. Did they make a hole in a runway? Did they actually hit something? Were they allowed to strike a Jeep Wagoneer? We don't know. But they pre-telegraphed it. Now all this news comes out that we had pre-telegraphed to Iran that we were going to strike their facilities. And of course, they knew that. So now, did they move all their stuff out beforehand?
Right.
So we have to ask that question. All right. So carrying on.
So this is a big thing. President Trump's strikes on Iranian nuclear facilities were even more damaging than first thought, the IAEA says.
So that's the International Atomic Energy Agency, right?
And
the IAEA, they were, so the guy who was one of the head IAEA people had released a report, a special report just before Israel struck that said, oh no, looks like Iran might be closer than we thought. And then 5 days later retracted it because it was completely bogus. Now that person is a very Zionistic, the IAEA chief who was overseeing that part from, lives in Argentina.
Okay.
And is very Israeli centric. So when Bibi said, we'd like to have a report that would justify a strike. So for whatever reason, Israel thought, now's a good time. Let's go strike Iran. This is our moment. We got to go do this. We're going to bomb a lot of people. But I think what their whole strategy was, they were going to drag the United States in, have us finish the job.
Yeah.
So now everybody, they super duper accomplished. They're saying, yeah, this has to have been the IAEA. So here's the thing, that IAEA person, have they been to the site? Nope. Why would they have better intel than anybody else?
Right.
Where's their intel? Again, it's a trust me, bro. This guy comes out and says, oh no, everything got destroyed and everybody ran with that story. He presented no evidence. Now, if I'm that guy also, I had just participated in mass murder because I put out a bogus report that led to the deaths of a lot of people.
Yeah.
Whole rest of your life, you're looking over both shoulders.
Oh, absolutely.
That's just that you play big boy ball game. You got to be ready for the big boy consequences.
That's right. That's right. So it continues. Narrative crumbles in real time from CNN that the strike basically failed. Quote, at Fordow, the mountain fortress just south of Tehran, officials identified additional strikes at the road leading up to the facility as well as one of the entrances. Meanwhile, at Natanz, the IAEA identified two impact holes from the U.S. strikes above the underground halls that have been used for enrichment as well as for storage.
So there's multiple sites. Fordow is the ultra deep facility under the mountains, and then they have this Natanz site. Now, this is bombing nuclear facilities, which a lot of people would say, okay, that didn't used to be a thing. You would specifically try and avoid those. And now they said, well, it's because it's Iranians. We don't really care because, you know, we gave them 60 days. So day 61, we're just going to blow up their nuclear facility. So can we be clear? A Rubicon has been crossed. We've just said to the whole world, that's okay. This is a legit target, just like, say, an undersea gas pipeline. Fair target now because somebody's already done it.
Right.
They're moving these goalposts faster
into
what's acceptable. Right.
And just so we're clear, when you say, nuclear sites or whatnot, it's not necessarily saying that that's where bombs were.
There's no evidence, zero evidence that any bombs have been pursued or made at this point in time.
These are places where they're creating power for their citizens, presumably, right?
Well, they say that it has legitimate medical and also they want to generate electricity.
Yeah.
That's what they say. There are civilian uses, but obviously it's a fuzzy line.
Right.
And it crosses over into military very quickly. There could have been. I could easily make a case, Evie, for why a country would be motivated to make a nuclear bomb. Because if you're Pakistan, that place is Islamic crazy. Do we ever say anything to them? We're like, no, we treat them with deference. Why? Because they're loaded to the gills with nuclear bombs. North Korea, legit certified nuts. Do we ever do anything more than shake a stern finger at them? No. You know why?
Nope.
Because they have a nuclear bomb. Message received.
Right.
If you want your country to be violated and its sovereign integrity shredded and you want to be bombed, don't have a bomb.
Right. It's true. We don't try to regime change those other places.
Now, the worst part of this is that Iran, too, went through the front door. It was a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. They had the JPCOA inspectors in there. They had the IAEA inspectors in there. They were filling out all the paperwork. They went through all of that, and then they got totally shafted by the IAEA. Again, that guy's going to have to look over his shoulder whole rest of his life, however long that is. And so what was the lesson? That's easy. Don't go through the front door. Do it just like Pakistan did. Do it underground.
Right.
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, we're making
keep everybody out of your
that
country.
Kind of diplomacy impossible, aren't we?
No, we ruined it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like we said specifically, get a bomb and do it secretly.
Right.
So honestly, I don't know why people can't think things through one or two steps, right? You know, we saw this devolve EV in this country where people said, well, you know, what were we going to do? We tried diplomacy. Like, no, people have been talking to Iran about their nuclear program for 30 years. Okay. You can always have more conversations. And
sure.
What we're really saying is the kind of diplomacy that Trump brought, which was you have to give us everything we want right now or else.
Right.
Right. That's mob style. That's not a negotiation.
Right. That's it's not imposition. The horse trading
right.
that normally
Iran
happens.
Iran has needs and wants. We have needs and wants. You try and line them all up. Israel has needs and wants. You put them all on the table. You see if you can fashion something everybody can agree to. That's negotiating.
Yeah.
So we
I
didn't.
Think you're right.
We didn't really negotiate. Remember, it was just 2 days into the whole thing, right after Israel had bombed them, we had just bombed Iran too. And Trump put out a tweet that said, you know, unconditional surrender, again, all caps.
Yeah.
Like unconditional surrender is what you do after you nuke somebody, like in 1945. Unconditional surrender is you have no conditions, right?
Right.
That's like that. You do that at the tail end after you've totally ruined somebody. And
that's kind of disrespectful.
Well, it is. It's not diplomacy, though. Can we just admit that? It's really more my way or the highway kind of stuff. All right. But,
Okay. So.
Well, this is awkward.
Carrying on. U.S. doesn't know where Iran's uranium is. A day after Trump claimed U.S. bunker busters wiped out Iran's nuclear program, senior officials admit that they don't know what happened to Iran's near bomb-grade uranium stockpile. Iran reportedly moved 400 kilograms of it before the strikes, enough to build 9 or 10 nuclear weapons.
Near bomb grade. This is 60%. You need like 90%+. But anyway, this is 60%. So it's not.
Okay.
It's not. That's why it says near bomb grade. Near.
Got it.
Emphasis on near.
Yeah.
But it's not there yet. It had a lot more enrichment to go. But just to put this in context. 400 kilograms is quite a lot of 60% uranium.
Is that a lot?
And if it was uranium metal, it would be a cube about this big.
Oh, wow.
So could they have transported that? Could they have? Well, if you look here, see that picture
probably.
Down there? That's the days before the Fordow complex was bombed. They knew it was coming. They lined up all their trucks and they took everything away.
Oh, look at that.
Yep. They took it all away. And then we bombed it. So we told them we were going to bomb. So this all starting to feel like kabuki theater to me.
Yeah, it has been kabuki theater for a long time, though. We know that. I mean,
what actually happened here? What was this actually about?
I don't know. In our country, it's been kabuki theater for a long time.
Yeah.
But doesn't it make sense that on the world stage it is, too? I mean,
yeah,
people pretend to have these alliances. They pretend to be angry at each other, you know, to be enemies, quote unquote. But I think behind the scenes, they all hang out at the same golf club. I don't know.
But again, Iran reportedly moved. We have no data. Anybody who's telling you exactly what happened, this is what happened. They were destroyed. They weren't destroyed. This happened. That happened. Nobody knows. At least I scoured every corner of the internet. I've read every article and it's all hearsay and unnamed officials and reportedlies and you know, all that stuff.
So inspectors are locked out. So now we're not going to have people going in there in any official capacity.
Yeah.
Give us that information.
Yeah,
looks like.
Yep. Well, no, I totally agree. So, I mean, you
know, what you got here? It's theater, says Brojos. Symbolic. Would explain the kabuki theater of it all.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
So something's going on here. We're in the cheap seats. We don't know what it is, but there's a game being played out. And so I would just like to point out to everyone that it obviously. One of these countries really cannot be trusted with nuclear weapons. Because,
yeah,
you know, obviously, you wouldn't want a country like Iran, who has, let's see, since World War II, what's that? Oh, zero. They have attacked or attempted to overthrow zero other countries since World War II. You could say, oh, heck, Chris, that's naive. They're mucking around in Syria with Hezbollah. And, you know, they did have to fight Iraq after they were attacked by Iraq under our bidding, you know, et cetera. But basically, they've mostly stuck to themselves, and that's what we know in terms of going cross-border and invading anybody. But
look at that
the United
list.
States, we've been kind of busy.
That's awful. That's so embarrassing.
We've been a little busy. By the way, think of the decorum required to really navigate the international landscape. Imagine all this dust up just happened, Evie. We have Israel's all stirred up, and the United States is all stirred up and Iran's all stirred up, but it finally settles down. Mm-hmm. So you know what's coming next, right? That is the perfect time for Trump to tweet this video out just either last night or early this. I think it was last night.
Okay.
You're going to love this video.
Bomb, 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 Iran.
They have the cross section of like a hummingbird or something, radar, like they're almost impossible to see.
Really?
Yeah. So we just flew them straight into their country, dropped some bombs off. But the idea that the president of the United States is tweeting out a teasing, mocking video when the dust is just settled, I'm like, mm-hmm. Now, I'm no senior diplomat, but I don't know.
I can't believe this is actually happening.
This is the timeline you were on, okay?
Are you sure? Pinch me. Am I awake?
This is the timeline that you are on. Okay.
Wow.
Now, guess what? It turns out that Japan and South Korea weren't happy at all with this idea that line we talked about, the line of bombing nuclear facilities, was a good one. Obviously, Japan, you can understand why they might be more sensitive about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's a mocking video that mocks their Japan's, you know, sensitivity over Hiroshima or something. I don't know. But so Prime Minister of Japan ditched the NATO leader summit, which is just happening right now, even as this is happening. Same thing for South Korea.
Wow.
They both said, no, we're out. They ditched and off. They just said no.
Wow.
Yeah, how about that?
They're like, screw your NATO.
Well, so Asia, so think of all that we've sacrificed so far in this little dust up that just happened, mm-hmm. right? On the plus side, I think we found out just how deeply compromised our U.S. government is mm-hmm. in entanglements with dual citizenship Israeli such as nuts, right? Okay, fine.
Right, right.
So we learned that, so maybe we can grow from that experience. But in pursuing that, what just happened is we just taught everybody in the world you can't trust us to negotiate with. We've lost Asia, right? This is losing Asia right here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
China's not happy. China was very stern about this.
Russia is
very stern about this. And Russia actually, I don't know if you know this, but Russia came out recently and said, you know, if Iran ends up with nuclear weapons, so be it, right? Maybe they'll get them somehow. Maybe they'll give them to them. We don't know, right? But this is not setting up like it's being presented here in the U.S. as if this was some gigantic, we bombed, we went in, our military is amazing, it can't be touched. But we basically flew into a country with no air defenses and dropped some bombs, which is not quite the dunk you think it is, militarily speaking.
It's bullying behavior. I mean, and when who had they attacked recently? What had they done that was so terrible that it merited that? I'm not aware of what has happened before. I'm sure there were little skirmishes and things like that. But like, seriously,
yeah.
Who cares if they have nuclear weapons? We do. I mean.
Well,
it's just so stupid. We have this double standard approach to everything.
I don't know how to make
sense of it.
Well, I think this is correct here, which is this one here.
Didn't Ukraine?
Oh, yep.
Oh, try bombing a nuclear power plant.
This is the one. Yes, yes, Ukraine. Yes, they did actually.
How is this master negotiating? We just lost all credibility. Agreed.
I think so. I mean, nobody's going to trust us anymore. And remember. Russia already called us years ago, non-agreement capable.
Yeah.
They said, look, we can make agreements with you, but you just tear them up. Another president comes along, you decide not to follow them. Doesn't matter. So you can spend all this time negotiating stuff, but you're not agreement capable. And that extends now to all of Europe, right? Because of the Minsk II Accords and all that, which even Angela Merkel came out later and said, oh, those were just a way of buying time so we could arm Ukraine so they could really F up Russia when the time came, right? Which was supposed to be a peace deal, but it was just giving them time to rearm.
Right,
so I'm a little concerned that where we are right now in this story is that we are just, this is now this so-called ceasefire. Both sides are just rearming right now. Iran's busy building stuff. They're probably going to, you know, get on the bat phone with, say, Russia and order up some S-300, 400, you know, anti-aircraft missile systems and et cetera. So,
oh, I feel totally lost in all of this because I'm actually sympathetic to Iran. I don't know why I am. I know that they have Islamist crazy people there and all that, but I just feel like this narrative is getting shoved down my throat. And I think that's probably what I'm really reacting to.
This is like every place I've ever been, right? Every single place, which is, I like the people. Iranian people are some of the nicest people you'll ever meet, right? Mm-hmm. Persians, they really are. Their radical Islamist government might be just complete pieces of shit.
Jerks, just like ours.
Just like ours, right?
Yeah.
I think there's strong case to be made for that, right? But so is ours. I showed you the qualitative list. So is Israel's. But what I don't like is that the people of Israel often conflate it and say, no. You can't be against my government without being anti-Semitic. And I like reject that because I'm like, well, then that's an impossible standard.
Yeah.
Because all governments are shit.
They just are kind of innately corrupt.
Innately corrupt. It just happens. So to say you have to either be 100%, this is the whole, remember, I'm old enough to remember George Bush. We had this whole dialectic, which was you're either for us or against us. You're either for Iran or you're anti-Semitic or whatever. You know, it's
not supporting our troops unless you support this war.
What are you going to do? We either bombed them or we didn't bomb them. And I'm here like thinking, no, I could think of 30 other ways that we could have tried to do things. So anyway,
crazy town.
Maybe it's too close for comfort because that's the Isfahan facility up there after we got done bombing it. It's a nuclear facility. That's Fukushima now below. Well, they kind of look the same.
Yeah, they do.
Right? They kind of look the same.
That's dangerous, though. I mean, the general public, I don't know how far away this is from, you know, civilian populations, but isn't this a potential nightmare that goes on for years and years? I mean, that's not a joke, bombing a nuclear facility.
No, it is definitely not.
It's dangerous.
All right. So when we come back from this quick break, we're going to talk about toxic Twitter real quick because you and I have been discussing this all week. This is an important message. But first, a message from one of my favorite sponsors. Hey, you know what? Gold and silver are my top choices to protect my wealth against inflation and economic instability. Now, with all the monetary debasement and all these geopolitical risks going on, hedging your wealth has never been more important. I recommend that everybody own some gold and silver, physical, in your hot little hands. But what if you want to hold it elsewhere? Goldcorp is an excellent choice and will rapidly and securely deliver physical gold and silver to your doorstep. But Goldcorp also lets you buy and store your gold and silver in high security vaults in places like Switzerland or Singapore or the US at your choice. And for all of my followers, Goldcorp will provide your first 6 months of storage for free. With Goldcorp, you get the convenience of buying and selling precious metals as easily as stocks, but with the security of your metals being fully allocated and segregated, meaning they sit in a secure location, on a shelf, in a box, with your name and your name only on it. Now, unlike your stocks, where you are actually a subordinated security entitlement claimant, something we learned during our Great Taking series, you are the one and only named owner of your metals. But just like stocks, you can still sell your metals instantly at market prices without any unnecessary delays. Need liquidity? Goldcorp gives you immediate access to cash. But if you prefer physical delivery, getting them shipped to you is a mouse click away. Goldcorp offers a range of investment options from gold and silver coins and bars to self-directed IRAs, again, all with fully segregated and secure storage. Take control of your financial future today with Goldcorp, where investing in precious metals has never been easier, more secure, or more transparent. Remember, Peak Prosperity followers get 6 months of free storage. So sign up now at peak.fan/goldcore to secure your 6 months of free storage. Again, that's peak.fan/goldcore. Now, I only mention and bring on affiliates like Goldcore because I believe in them and I believe in gold and silver. I'm not coin operated. I really want to help people and do the right thing. So with that, let's turn now to what we would call toxic Twitter Evie, you and I mean, we've been.
Oh, I've known this forever. You're just figuring it
out. I'm just figuring it out. But I want to look. I think it's like this now, only with automated AI bots. I don't know if you've seen this before, Evie. If you haven't, you're in for a treat. This is the comedian you'll recognize. But this to me, I think, is how social media is right now, that there are people like this out there.
One of the best ways to drain people's energy nowadays is via the internet. This woman is a astrophysicist. Actually, this is not how space works. Read a book. Now I just wait for the comments to come in. Hey, can you mansplain any louder? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure.
These are all different accounts that I have set up. The energy you get this way isn't quite as pure, but if you do enough of it, it'll fill you up. Shanghai sucked. Where was the Chinatown? Jason Mraz is just too weird for me. Jesus actually hates horses. Childhood obesity, LMFO. When they call you a dumbass, you know you've got them. They called me a dumbass. Women are getting too tall. You can drain their energy via social media without having to even be near them. That is racist. You're correct.
It is.
Oh, yeah. 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 Oh, they hate me.
It's surprisingly simple to get total strangers completely furious with you.
They should get a life.
So I raise that because it's a humorous way to deal with it. But this past week, because it involved Israel, which is always a great time, you just get this wall of bots, and also what they call the Hasbara. You have the faithful who come out, defend anything Israel does, no matter what it is, and they go through some contortions to try and do that.
Right.
But
logic
as well,
contortions.
It's way beyond that now. So the military-industrial complex, you will not get as attacked in America for anything except for being for peace. So look, we talk about that. We have this Twitter became very toxic because there were all these bots out there, probably run by CIA, NSA, you know, Raytheon, the military, whatever, because you could say almost anything and skate by compared to if you say, wait a minute, I don't agree with this bombing campaign.
Right.
Like
there's no room for questions or uncertainty or different opinions.
Yep.
Yeah. They jump all over you.
They do.
And they seem to manufacture or be very good at presenting the next most urgent thing. So
it's an emergency.
Yeah. Yesterday's news is no longer discussed. You know, it moves on so quickly that for somebody actually trying to emotionally process, there's no space for that.
So
that's messed up.
Yeah. Which makes it tricky. So now we're going to move on. And this is very instructive. This is a fractal instruction right here for me. We're going to talk about New York City's Democrat mayor. And I got, you know, little quotes around there because he's not a Democrat. But so, Evie, here's where we are. The Democratic primary just came out and Zohran Mamdani won. And Cuomo concedes to Mamdani. He won. He deserves it, he said.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is this still, are we still talking about Twitter?
No. I moved on.
You moved on?
No time to process that.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So you found this on Twitter, though.
Sure.
Okay. Just checking. So independent probe finds Cuomo COVID response engendered public mistrust.
Public mistrust. So can we be clear about this? By engendered public mistrust, what they're trying to delicately say is Cuomo's policies murdered tens of thousands of elderly people in old folks or long-term care homes. And that tends to engender mistrust when you kill granny and grandpa. It's just somehow that creates a level of mistrust. So, I mean, the death, so it's really gross.
It's really bad. More than 15,000 residents in New York nursing homes died of COVID-19. Andrew Cuomo made $5.1 million off of their deaths. Some would call him a hitman. And these were grandmothers and grandfathers that you know, probably some of you, or like your grandmothers and grandfathers that just want to be near their family that weren't allowed to say goodbye, that died alone, terrified and scared.
Yep.
Right? From a disease that didn't necessarily have to be fatal.
Well, if New York's going to be smart at all, they will get to have a Republican to be mayor again.
Good time for a Republican to be mayor again in New York City. That would be awesome.
Yep.
That would be great.
Yeah. I mean, he was. I mean, there's no other way to put
killer.
It.
Yeah.
Cuomo was that. And the $5.1 million being referenced here is he got a book deal out of this. Okay. Which, by the way, he had his staffers write, not even him. It's an autobiography that other people were writing. He's probably yelling at them the whole time. Not a good guy. I have to ask that question. You know, really? How was it that Cuomo was the best the party Democratic machinery could tap? Really? You had to go with a grandma killer? That was your best option. Like, we searched far and wide. New York City's mayor is a really big, important spot. So
right.
Let's use...
Couldn't there be other candidates?
Yeah. Didn't Kamala want the job? I mean, no, it's just like the Democratic Party is just imploding at this point in time.
I know.
But they're also revealing themselves. I think this is revealing. Like, literally, yes, they looked around in the Democratic Party, whatever machinery has taken, whatever soul, spirit sucking thing has taken over the machinery of that organization,
mm-hmm.
said, you know what? We actually like Cuomo. He's our kind of guy because he killed 15,000 elderly people.
Right. They probably like him because he'll carry out whatever the next operation is. Without any questions,
yeah,
right?
You can trust this guy. Now, when I say he did that, what happened was they would take people who had COVID legit in a hospital setting, and then they moved them into old folks' homes, right? Where you have, and then the old folks got substandard care because, of course, you know, we couldn't allow anything like ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or even just something as like, why would you take people with a known respiratory pathogen and put them into an old folks' home? You'd want to do the opposite of that,
right?
But they did that, right? And how that was allowed to persist in all of that, it's crazy. But I'm going to build the case for that in just a second. You're going to see it. It's worse than advertised. Now, this is Mamdani himself. He's actually strikes me as a fairly smart guy who's a good public speaker. Okay, mm-hmm. But then there's the words he says.
We have won because New Yorkers have stood up for a city they can afford, a city where they can do more than just struggle. And it's where the mayor will use their power to reject Donald Trump's fascism, to stop mass ICE agents from deporting our neighbors, and to govern our city as a model for the Democratic Party.
Okay. All right.
Mamdani, is that how you say his name?
Mamdani. So you heard a few things in there, right? We're going to recreate utopia here. You know this language, right? We're just going to tweak a few things and we're going to have an affordable, livable city again, right?
Right,
so now
right.
We're down to the details. Those are good words. How are you going to do that?
How are they going to do that?
Okay.
Oh, they're going to do it like this. Taxation isn't theft. When Cuomo refuses to tax the rich, he's refusing to let workers enjoy the wealth they created, Mamdani is saying. When he says low taxes foster a business-friendly environment, he means an environment where it's easy for bosses to steal from workers. Taxation isn't theft. Capitalism is.
So, I mean, this is classic Marxist socialist. It's the two main emotions that he's going to be channeling are resentment and envy.
Right.
And the number one thing that socialists understand, like they understand breathing, is that you have something that they need.
Right.
So look what he says here. He's refusing Governor Cuomo, because this is an older tweet, but this is back when Governor Cuomo was governor, right? Now
right,
it's
right.
Kathy Hochul, who's just as bad, just right. Demonic. But he says, when Cuomo refuses to tax the rich, he's refusing to let the workers enjoy the wealth they created. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So think about that for a second. So that means, Evie, that you decide to go through all of the hoopla of jumping through all of the permits and the red tape and the inspections and everything to set up, say, a restaurant in New York City.
Right.
You're going to put capital at risk. You're going to have to hire. You're going to have to, you know, go
I'm
into
gonna
debt.
I'm going to work like a dog.
You're going to work like a dog and you're going to hire people. And he's saying you're stealing from them because you created this restaurant that they work in.
Right.
Right.
Which is an asset to me and not to them, basically. And that's unfair.
They created the wealth. You didn't do it, right? It's just like to a socialist, the restaurant, the chefs, the schedule, the load balancing, the ordering, the inventory, the wages, the legal fees, the business incorporation fees, the insurance, all of that just magically happens.
Yeah, they believe I should be responsible for that, basically.
It just all shows up magically. Mm-hmm. And then the workers actually create the wealth. This is right. Nobody believes that.
Right. The expenses belong to me and the profit belongs to them.
Because they did all the work, right? Because nobody's as stupid, right? But this is the politics of resentment. You have a lot of people out there who also don't understand how it is they even have a job, mm-hmm. or what's required to create a job.
That's right.
They would never have the fortitude or mm-hmm. the stamina mm-hmm. or the risk tolerance to create jobs, most of them.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So they're lucky in my world that they have a job that they can go to because somebody else is carrying all of that other stuff.
That's right.
Right. This would be like walking into a household and saying, well, you know, the kids are the reason this whole household exists and the parents are just evil people for doling out only $2 a week in allowance, you know. Don't they realize the kids are the only reason this household on and on? It's just stupid.
Yeah.
It's
crappy logic.
But wait, it gets worse.
Great. Okay. We don't need an investigation to know that the NYPD is racist, anti-queer, and a major threat to public safety. What? He's talking about defunding the police? He's bringing that out again?
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Time to defund the NYPD. This is your potential next mayor in New York City. What could go wrong?
And not needing an investigation is scary. That's a scary thing to go down. No, we want to defund the police, he says, in response to Cuomo saying, when people are saying defund the police, they are saying they want to see the real fundamental change. He says the state is passing an important package of reforms and local mayors or police departments must also hear the people
and make changes, right? Mm-hmm. And he's saying, no, we want to defund the police. He's like, no, that's you had it right.
Wow.
How about this then?
Great. More taxes and masks. Want to quote or hashtag tax the rich to fund a real recovery? Want a mask to support the hashtag public power and the need for democratically controlled utilities? For a limited time only, you can do both. I guess if you sign up for this thing, sign up to be a field lead and get one of these bad boys for free. So he's giving out free masks, I guess.
We like masks, but listen to that. Want to tax the rich to fund a real recovery. So this is the concept, is that the way you get a real recovery is by taxing the rich. Now, New York City already has some of the highest taxes in the world.
Yeah, it does.
It's ridiculous.
Hugely expensive.
Right. I mean, you have the real estate taxes in there are extraordinary.
Oh, they're awful.
They have income taxes there that are extraordinary, right? Like it's like the state is already bad, but New York has a surcharge on top of that.
Oh my gosh.
Right? And it's pretty strong. And the whole idea is that the way you get to recovery, though, if you want a real recovery, just tax the rich. Now, what they never do in these things is they never actually, Mamdani would never do this, to say, here's how many rich people we have. Here's how much they earn. Here's how much they're taxing currently. Here's how much we're going to increase it by. That's a number. Now, when I take this number and I apportion it thus and so, utopia, right? They won't actually take you through the math because it's about the emotion of saying greed and resentment. There are these rich people.
This is unfair.
It's unfair because that's what Marxism and socialism is. So it's just astonishing that we're getting to this here in the U.S. But here he is in 21 saying some things.
He says, walking while trans has criminalized black and brown transgender women for too long, all for the crime of existence. This is a historic win in our continual fight to dismantle the police state, legalize sex work, and create a state where everyone has the right to walk on our streets. You can read more about Candy's story and the fight for trans rights and decriminalizing sex work here. And is it a transgender sex worker? What's happening?
I don't know.
I don't understand.
Walking while trans has criminalized black and brown transgender women. I don't even know what that's referring to.
Okay. So
like in New York City, people walk around looking all kinds of ways and nobody says nothing about it.
No.
Ever.
So, and nobody even blinks twice.
Nope.
Because it's that kind of a city, but good grief. So he wants to legalize sex work.
Yeah,
and dismantle the police at the same time.
Yep, dismantle the police, more prostitution. Somehow this is good for society. Okay, so carrying on, I'll take this one.
All right.
Look, Robbie Starbucks says this very well. As a public service announcement, PSA to New Yorkers ready to flee to Florida, Texas, Tennessee, now that it looks like socialist Zohran Mamdani will be New York City's next mayor, people expect you to be pleasant and friendly. Don't ever vote for a Democrat here. Assimilate to our way of life. What he's saying is the same thing I've heard from my friends in New Hampshire, where people in Massachusetts have created a literal hellhole for themselves. High taxes, low services, grubby, you know, conditions, unsafe streets. And then they say, wow, I don't like living here. And they leave and they bring that same ethos to the next place they go to. This has happened in place like Austin, Texas. So this thing happens where the progressives, the Democrats try and create utopia where they live by removing shoplifting limits and handing out free needles and doing all these things. Mm-hmm. And ultimately it creates a very unsafe, terrible environment. Nobody wants to live there. And then they leave and then they do it again. So it's like a spreading cancer is what he's saying here.
Kind of is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It seems like that.
So don't do that. Don't do that. Okay.
Don't do that.
He also wants
no cost childcare. After rent, the biggest cost for New York's working families is childcare. It's literally driving them out of the city. New Yorkers with children under six are leaving at double the rate of all others. The burden falls heaviest on mothers who are giving up paying jobs to do unpaid childcare. Zohran will implement free childcare for every New Yorker aged 6 weeks to 5 years, ensuring high-quality programming for all families. And he will bring up wages for childcare workers, a quarter of whom currently live in poverty, to be at parity with public school teachers. It will foster early childhood development, save parents money, and keep our families in the city they call home.
Yeah, well, they forgot to answer that one question.
Who's going to pay
right
for that?
Down here. Who is going to pay for that? Right. Again, these plans, they have these plans and they never articulate the plans.
No.
They never spell out how this plan works. Free childcare.
Right. It's fantasy. It really is.
I'm not saying it's right that you know, childcare is so expensive and all of this, but the idea is that, oh, well, we'll make this free.
Right.
For people, but somebody has to pay for that. Okay.
Somebody's got to foot the bill.
Who's going to pay for this?
We can't afford to wait for the private sector to solve this crisis.
The housing crisis.
Right. Zohran will triple the city's production of publicly subsidized, permanently affordable, union-built, rent-stabilized homes.
Okay, hold on. So publicly subsidized. Who's going to pay for
that? Taxpayer-funded.
Who's going to pay for that? Okay.
But right?
So rent-stabilized is a term. That's one thing, right? Rent stabilized means they try and control the price at which it goes up.
Right,
it's still
right.
Not a great deal for landlords and people who have to keep up with escalating costs of things like insurance and property taxes. But here's what he's actually talking about. So you'll love this, Evie. I know you're going to love this because this is a glitzy campaign ad.
I'm Assemblyman Zohran Mamdani, and I'm running for mayor to freeze the rent for every rent stabilized tenant.
Wait, you're going to freeze my rent?
Yes.
Did I hear rent freeze?
Yes, this guy's going to freeze the rent.
No hike?
None.
This guy's going to freeze the rent.
It's true. As your next mayor, I will freeze your rent.
Paid for by Zohran for NYC.
Wow.
They're going to freeze the rent.
How is that going to work for landlords?
Are they going to freeze the property taxes?
Yeah, because that's going to suck for people that own buildings.
No. So this is such a dangerous idea right here. The idea is that I, as a public official, am going to take your private business, right? Which, you know, if you're a landlord, it's a business, right? I'm going to take your private business and I'm going to cap your revenues. But I'm going to leave the expense line. That's up to you. And by the way, I'm in charge of part of your expense line. And I'm going to drive that through the roof. It's a recipe for disaster. 100%. 100%.
Yeah. What could go wrong?
But can we just be totally honest about this? Here's what he's actually saying. He wants to support legislation ending cash bails.
Oh, decarceral legislation. End cash bail. Repeal the walking while trans ban. I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that is either.
Decriminalize sex work, legalize marijuana, permit safe injection sites, restrict solitary confinement, enact elder parole, re-enfranchise incarcerated New Yorkers.
And
we will also decriminalize simple drug possession, repeal all mandatory minimum sentences, reduce maximum sentences with retroactive effect, repeal felony bump-up status, repeal sentencing statutes, repeal sentencing enhancements, and end cooperation with ICE.
Yep.
Wow. Last but not least.
That was in 2020, by the way. So this is, you get the flavor with this guy, right?
You can get the flavor of him.
Okay. So just to review, this is Zohran Mamdani's New York City. It's going to have rent controls, including rent freezes. He's promoting also the idea of government-run stores. We didn't cover that, but he said the same thing. He thinks the government should run stores because, you know what? All these stores are like fleeing because of these disastrous progressive policies. Walgreens is leaving. You know what we'll do? We'll have government-run stores so then the government can deal with the shoplifting.
God.
$30 minimum wage, free child care, more prostitution. What could go wrong? Actually, what could go right? Nobody knows. Okay.
Nobody knows.
All right, Evie. So here's what we have to do. You know what? The good news is that this has all been tried before. So we have some models we can look at.
Right.
And so New York City is going to, if they finally elect this guy, they're going to end up looking either like London or South Africa. So, oh, good luck. Look at this.
Or San Francisco.
Or San Francisco. I could have picked a dozen things. I picked two. We're going to look at a couple comparisons here. But look at this.
In the words of Nelson Mandela, it always seems impossible until it's done. My friends, it is done, and you are the ones who did it. I am honored to be your Democratic nominee for the mayor of New York City.
All right.
This is 10 hours ago.
Yeah, this is just today. So,
wow.
Nelson Mandela. So he's hearkening a great leader, Nelson Mandela. So he's like, oh, yeah, I'm like that. At least he didn't. Well, anyway, I could make other comparisons. But so, okay. South Africa, then.
All right.
Let's look at South Africa real quick. Okay. It's not even keeping up with Botswana on the GDP per capita chart. I think you can see here. It's kind of dead flat to trending downwards. It's just been it's just been going nowhere.
Yeah.
Nowhere. And by the way, inflation's been going up too. So that's misery. Right. A flat line on this chart is miserable.
Is misery.
And by the way, South Africa is basically a crime scene right now.
Right. Well, there's been so much else going on there, right? With them killing farmers and all that other stuff. South Africa has a youth unemployment rate of 58%. That's close to 60% of the youth population unemployed.
So New York has that to look forward to. It's coming.
NGOs who run the country are in courts trying to enforce more immigrant rights and employment.
Let's end ICE right away. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And South Africans must be complacent.
Complacent. Yeah.
They spelled that wrong. People then wonder why there's a crime problem in South Africa. And then shocking first quarter crime stats were released on Friday. South Africa is more dangerous than a war zone. In just 90 days, 1,574 people were killed in the Ukraine war. In South Africa, 6,228 people were murdered just in the last 90 days.
90 days. Not a huge country either, by the way. Right?
No.
All right. So it's a crime zone. That's where we're headed. By the way, I thought this kind of brought it home. This is a very typical mugging in South Africa. This person over here is getting mugged.
And people just watch?
Yeah, just.
So they're going through his pockets.
Yep. Three black gentlemen. That's a white guy. Now he's just been mugged. And.
Whoa. And nobody does anything?
That's it. That's what it looks like when you're in a basic failed state at that point.
They just walk around him and over him like nothing happened.
Like nothing happened.
Wow.
Because it happens every day, all day. I mean, 6,000 murders in 90 days of mugging.
And it's that resentment and envy that's driving that.
Oh, yeah. He deserved
it. Like,
that white guy.
Exactly. He deserved it.
He deserved it. He probably could afford to lose whatever he just lost there. But this is what it looks like.
Green Street.
In London,
Hannah
right now.
Century,
this video is just from the other day.
Everywhere. Oh my God. Look, just bought a £10 table, £5 chair, and just sat any corner. Oh, this is it. Do you guys know how long Green Street is? It's long, and it's like this packed. It's like everyone's got business today. Oh my God, look at that.
Wow. People
come
just...
get your henna's! Come get your henna on your fingers! What? I didn't even know henna's going down like this.
Yeah, so anyway, it just carries on and on. But
whoa.
But
is that how it used to be there?
I've not been there before. Whites are minorities in most UK cities now. Minorities. And so this has been an active program to bring in as many as immigrants as possible.
The great replacement theory.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, to differentiate, remember, a migrant is not an immigrant. An immigrant comes in through a process through the front door.
Legal
process. They're selected carefully. Yeah. They go through a fairly rigorous vetting process. A migrant comes over in a boat, you know, lives, ducks under some razor wire, gets here illegally, something like that. But they always try and confuse them, you know, and this guy, Mamdani's no different. He's like, well, you know, we have to protect our immigrants. Like, no, we're not talking immigrants, dude. Okay. So that's London, right? But check this out. So this just happened today, last night.
Okay.
And you can read that up top there.
This is an uprising waiting to happen. Illegal immigrants who were staying at the Roosevelt Hotel in New York City are now homeless. Pray for Manhattan and count your blessings that you and your family don't live there. I'm saddened to see the city I once lived in and loved become this.
So this is what the former mayor, Eric Adams, our current, soon to be former, has been like saying. This is where the Democratic Party like landed on him like a ton of bricks, because he's like, right, what do we do with all these people? The right. Roosevelt Hotel very famously had.
It's a historical, beautiful old place.
Yeah, but I was going to say, most famously now, it's the place that's been completely taken over by migrants. Because the government's paying whatever, $10 million a day or whatever it costs to rent every room out.
Yep.
I don't know what it's some obscene.
They're living in luxury.
But they just kicked them all out. So I guess they're all done with that. So I'm going to ask the question, summer heat, right? Think of yourself, Evie. And like most riots happen in August because it's like people are all cranky. I get heat cranky. You get heat cranky. Yeah. We're humans. Humans get heat cranky.
It's true.
So all these humans just got kicked out. Look at this. This is what it looked like last night.
Oh my God. People are just laying
somehow this
out
feels
on the
like,
street.
Like this is progressive values. Like this is good for these people somehow.
Yeah.
Like somehow like, you have to spin this and say,
this makes me feel good about
the tired, the poor, this yearning to be, but look at this.
What a disaster. It's just, it is exactly like San Francisco already.
Yep. Strange fluids there's going up and down the sidewalk.
Yeah, there's going to be poo. That's the pee spot right there.
Yep. I guess that's the toilet.
Oh my God. Wow.
Right?
That's really sad.
It is sad, but we had no plan for bringing these people in. They came in way too fast. We had no plan of actually assimilating them. We had no plan for what they were going to do. But the idea was the Democrats, and Mayorkas in particular, total traitor to the country, said, we're just going to bring these people in as fast as possible. And then somehow New York, in its infinite wisdom, says, you know who we like? We like this Mamdani guy.
Yeah.
He's going to be the answer to this stuff because he's going to tax the rich and make this problem go away. And I'm here to say he's going to exacerbate the problem and make it worse. So this is what it's like now for somebody. This is a young girl. She posted this, I don't know, maybe I'm going to guess 6 months ago is when I ran across it.
Oh, yeah.
But this is her experience trying to just get from A to B in London.
Do you think this outfit is provocative? Do you think it's provocative? I'm wearing a fucking... How is this? Okay, right? Keep this in mind. This is what I was wearing. I had to go one stop on the tubes. One stop, 5 minutes. 5 minutes is the total travel time from the tube to the nail salon. I had to get my nails done, right? On the tube, I get on, right? Two guys sit next to me. One of them goes like this, stretches his arm. I'm sitting over there. Stretches his arm. He touches my shoulder and his friend's laughing and he is laughing. 5 minutes, guys. What is going on? I get off the tube, some guy, he gets off the tube as well, follows me when I get out the station. I kind of do the thing where you look back. This guy's fully following me. He followed me all the way to the nail salon. At the traffic light, another guy came from the front. He purposely walked in my way so he could bump into me, and a guy following me from the behind. This was 5 minutes. 5 minutes. And guess what? It was at 1 p.m. during the day, broad daylight. How is it possible that I was fucking shitting myself, scared to go outside from the nail salon after, because I had interactions with three people where I was scared for my safety. This is like not okay. Middle of the day in London. Come on.
Wow.
This is not fair. What the fuck is going on? Figure your shit out. Oh my God.
That's awful.
So what would you do if you, if that was your common experience?
What would I do?
Yeah.
I'd get out of there. I mean, my instinct would be to get away from it.
If you could, if you couldn't, I know you, you would not leave the home.
Probably not. If I didn't feel safe, I wouldn't.
Nope. And that's very common.
And you can't carry there.
No,
right?
No, you're not allowed to defend yourself.
You can't have any weapon that would make you feel safer. Because as a woman, you definitely pay attention to stuff like that. And yep. But it's terrorizing. That's terror right yep. there. And it's not fair.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, yes, obviously, her hair was very provocative.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was the blonde.
It's just awful. It is
yeah. why women are not allowed to be alone in public in the Middle East.
True. Yep. Yeah. So, but this is on purpose, right? So on purpose, they brought all these people in. On purpose, they've made it so that if you complain about this on social media, you will go to prison. On purpose, they've made it that if you even remotely even indicate that you are not happy with this particular
right.
program,
they'll knock on your door.
They will knock on your door, yeah. right? But meanwhile, this is people's daily experience. And so, you know, we know people now who went to London and had to leave, like they were only there a few months and had to exfil because they said they didn't feel safe. They didn't like it. And yeah. these were people who were working at a fairly high level government position. I mean, these are
right.
They theoretically have access to resources you and I don't have. And even they were like, ooh, this is ugly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's ugly now. And by the way, this is before resources even really dial in and get tight. The UK is in deep trouble. By the way, if you live mm-hmm. there, strongest advice I have, live way out in the country and find a way to get illegal arms if you have to, or some way of protecting yourself you feel good about, giant malamutes, whatever you have to do.
Right.
You know, lots of friends, whatever you have to do.
You get some bull cows.
Trained kangaroos, whatever you have to do, right? Whatever you can do.
Or get leave. Out.
Yeah. Or leave. Or, yeah. Or
get
or,
out.
Or leave.
Yeah.
So let's carry on with this then. So
it turns out 57% of women don't feel safe on London's streets. Nearly half have been followed, over a quarter physically or sexually assaulted.
Okay, hang on. All right. So, dudes in the UK, if you can't protect your women, you've failed. You've lost it as a society. You've completely failed, right? You're in an aquarium and they put in some male beta fish with you and you're guppies at this point. When you can't protect your women, you've lost it. You've lost the plot line. Now, I see that people are starting to rise up against this a little bit in places like Scotland and Ireland. There started to be some pushback, but as Michael Yon says, there's really no way through that, no way to the end of this except going through it. There's going to be some fighting at some point, right? Because as JFK, the senior said, those who would make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. So what they've done is they've created very, very deeply unsafe situations and just let that all run. And Evie, it's not even, it's pretty bad. Like, this is in London. This is a London park, but maybe this is what Central Park should look like. Or maybe this is what, you know, people who are voting for socialist Marxists, this is what I think they would want Central Park to look like. Those are machetes.
What? They're running after people with machetes?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. People get hacked by machetes all the time there now.
Oh, that's awful.
That guy's not doing so good anymore.
Yikes.
So anyway, but it's like this all the time there now. Like just even if they didn't even have machetes, that assemblage of people of that age, from all those different cultures, I already feel on edge.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Because we don't maybe share the same ethos about how they should respect you or me
right.
or anything
and
else.
And clearly, I mean, I don't know when this is, but they have nothing to be doing during the middle of the day except hang around in big throngs. Like,
yep.
that's not healthy either. You
yep.
know, for a bunch of young people to be unemployed, you know, and given a debit card, excuse me, by wherever. Because I'm guessing that the UK, like in London, they give the same kind of debit card crap mm-hmm. that we do here.
Yep.
When people come across illegally.
Yep.
It's really sad.
And it's true, Viv B, these machete videos have been there common for years. I mean, I could have put up hundreds of them here.
If you go up a little bit, Dan Edwards asked a question that I thought was interesting.
Where?
Let's see. Where is it? He was saying, and no, it's right there.
This one?
Yep.
Okay.
Hey guys, has anyone gone into Springfield recently and investigated down there? Is this stuff coming to a city near us in Massachusetts?
Well, we were just at a No Kings rally.
That's right.
But I don't know if that was representative of.
We were there investigating.
Yep. So,
just to be clear.
By the way, this next lady is a dating advice professional and she lives in London. And so she said this.
Just came back from a large birthday party full of very wealthy people. Nearly all of them are leaving the UK, all for the exact same two reasons. Too much tax and too many migrants.
That's the model, right? That's the model New York City is about to pursue. So I just want to give a little foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it takes a few years for this to really fully, you know, turn into a
play
complete,
yep.
You know, bunghole. But this is the direction it's all going.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And so the wealthy people leave, right? And then you have poorer people and then you have lower taxes. And then you find out where's all the prosperity gone. And eventually they're like, well, we have to have government run stores because nobody's here to run the stores. Like,
right. Yeah,
if only this could have been foreseen. This is the mysterious part to me, Evie, is that the left, the progressives don't understand that their utopian visions always fail for the same reasons. Greed and resentment do mm-hmm. not make new things appear.
They don't make prosperity.
They don't.
No, hard work. And being organized and coming together and, you know, critical thinking and yep. rationality, that's what makes prosperity.
Yep.
In my opinion. But
well, so the mayor of London, who's overseen a lot of that decline, Sadiq Khan, you'll be unsurprised to find out that he just got knighted on June 10th for a job well done. Got the
what?
Whole bend the knee sword from the King Charles.
No way.
Yeah.
Imagine being given a knighthood for turning London into a third world shithole.
Yep.
The London promise. If you work hard and get a helping hand, you can achieve anything. Right. Immensely proud to receive a knighthood from His Majesty the King, growing up on a council estate in Tooting, I never imagined
one day I would sell out my country and ruin it.
Exactly.
To finish the sentence there.
Wow.
Yeah. No, but,
wow.
But this is the thing. It is you get rewarded for doing what the machine wants. And the machine clearly wants Western society broken. It wants us destroyed for some reason.
It does.
I don't know why, but it just does.
Mm-hmm.
And so you watch these people get knighted and nobody gets in trouble, right? So one of my great disappointments with the Trump administration so far is that Mayorkas has not been arrested.
Right.
He needs to be arrested, and all his underlings, everybody who was involved.
He should have been. That was treason.
Yes. And I think that destroying a city like London shouldn't get you a knighthood.
Mm-hmm.
It ought to get you a one-way trip to the slammer, you mm-hmm. know, London mm-hmm. Tower for this guy at best.
That's right.
But that's me. So guess what? Choices have consequences, Evie. And already people are not wasting any time saying these kinds of things to New Yorkers.
Dear New York. When your state completely turns to crap, don't even think about moving here to Texas. You won't be New Yorking my Texas.
Yep, sorry.
Dear New York, you fucked up big time. Do not start moving to Republican cities and states. We do not want you.
Mm-hmm.
On behalf of red state residents everywhere in New York City, we do not want your leftist political refugees in our state. Elections have consequences. Now you get to live with them.
Yep.
New York City voters, do not move to my state after you find out. Yeah.
Yeah. Fafo. So, but this is very common now. People have started to figure out the pattern. And the pattern is all these progressive people, they like to administrate themselves. They have these utopian ideals. They think abstractly. We have to help the people.
Right.
We have to tax the rich. Right. They never mm-hmm. have a program for that. But when you strip away all the nonsense, it's you have something I want. And I'm envious of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've worked for your stuff, but that doesn't feel fair to me.
Mm-hmm.
I just want it anyway.
That's right. That's right. That's what they did out in California, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, a ton of people have left California for the same reasons, I think.
Yeah.
And they also, we've heard, have gone to other states and brought their politics with them. And that's, I think, why people are reacting that way.
Yep. Well, indeed. Okay. So very quickly, a less than 1 minute commercial from my other favorite sponsor. Let's hear from them right now. I know what's plaguing you. You feel like everybody around you has gone insane. Hello, Dr. Chris Martinson here. Look, We've built a world on cheap oil, endless growth, and borrowed time. But the cracks are showing. Inflation's up, resources are thinning, and the old rules don't seem to apply anymore. I've tracked this for years, from the crash course to today, and I'm not here to sugarcoat it. At Peak Prosperity, I'm your information scout, hunting down the facts, cutting through the noise, and showing you how to adapt. This isn't just information, it's a lifeline. The game is changing fast. Are you ready? Subscribe to Peak Prosperity now, and let's get ahead of the curve. All right, and we are back with this. Let's talk about this now. Can we talk about the, I got, you know what? It's not just that the blue states ruin prosperity, Evie.
Yeah.
It's that they actually promote death and destruction as well. And yeah. I have a long memory. I can't get over things. Like, I can't get over what happened during COVID, right? Civil rights stripped away. They put this death jab in everybody. They put people on ventilators and demonized ivermectin, even though that was like exactly the wrong thing to do. And if you flip a coin 100 times and it comes up heads every time, you've got to start thinking, well, maybe it's not a fair coin. Maybe this is a program. So once we look at this, we can, you remember we talked about how Cuomo moved people with active respiratory infections into old folks' homes and then failed in a standard of care in those old folks' homes. And a lot of people died in the care of the old folks' homes. So that was a thing. But was that just a New York thing? Well, now we can look at all the states with long-term care deaths. And everybody who had a long-term care death of more than 50%, oops, I forgot to highlight Delaware there, just under that top red bar, Colorado, Connecticut, then Delaware. I should have highlighted them, just an oversight. But if you had more than 50% of your long-term care share of deaths that came with COVID, you got a red bar. So let's start adding this up. That was Colorado, it was Connecticut, it was Delaware, it was Illinois, it was Indiana. Are you seeing the pattern yet?
Whoa.
Kentucky, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Missouri, New Hampshire, North Dakota, Ohio, Oregon, Pennsylvania.
You forgot Vermont.
Did I miss Vermont?
Yeah.
All the way at the bottom. I was reading down there. I would get there eventually.
Oh, sorry.
Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington. So when you add that up, it is almost overwhelmingly blue states.
Yeah.
Why was it that blue states had the highest level of care deaths in long-term care homes? Well, the only answer I can come up with is
that is weird.
They don't care about old folks and they don't care about kids.
Right.
They actually
don't care about people.
Well, abstractly, but not concretely.
Exactly.
Right. Concretely, exactly. You would say which old folks homes are losing the least. I mean, it was a staggering difference, right?
Wow.
Some of these, like, look at Rhode Island, 75%. You'd think, well, can I look at Wisconsin and ask what they're up to with 27% or Tennessee?
Right.
How did Tennessee get by with 27%?
How did it? And
right?
And Tennessee is pretty, like, the argument could be, you know, some places are more metropolitan and have more cities, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think that's the case necessarily here.
Yeah, well, so I've presented this before, but this is looking at the excess deaths in the UK. So I'm arguing here that London, the part of the UK, that the UK is going to be a model for what New York is voting for itself. That, in fact, I would submit the same is true of Washington State, Seattle and all of that, Oregon, like whole parts of California. You know, the bluer the part is, the more this came true. But this really breaks it down, because the UK isn't just England. It's also Northern Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting was this shows the amount of excess deaths above a standard deviation. Anything above this red dotted line is an emergency, and you have to look at it because you're so many standard deviations away from expected normal statistical behavior. Something really bad is going on. And look, here's this first COVID wave in early 2020. Look, 22 standard deviations above normal. I mean, this is like, oh my God,
that's
worst
crazy
thing ever, right? And then here's this other giant wave, but there are these four lesser waves. Anytime you poke your head above that red dotted line, you have trouble. But would you look at this? Northern Ireland never poked its head above the dotted line. Now, how is it that that the England proper had statistically anomalous deaths that were literally 1 in a billion year, you know, if it was random chance? And Northern Ireland never did. Scotland didn't. Wales didn't. So wait a minute. I thought the COVID narrative was there was this global respiratory virus that just went through the air. You have to stay 6 feet apart and you do all of that. But it somehow didn't hit Ireland, Scotland, or Wales. Now, what happened?
What happened?
Now, we know, because I've done the reporting on this, that this was called the Midazolam murders. What happened was they in England, they put forward a set of policies that said, oh, if older people seem to have the COVID, make them comfortable, give them overdoses of Midazolam and morphine. And so they killed them. And there's the data right there. This is about 55,000 old people in England who were killed by the system. So that system also thinks abstractly and, you know, honestly, it was probably better for the system because they have to pay for it with the NHS and all that. And it would be cheaper if these old people died rather than you had them live out their lives in comfort and care, you know, after they've given all they can.
But they're not even necessarily old. That's 45 to 64. That's not old.
Well, they got killed.
I know.
These were people who were in care homes. And for the most part, they just got zipped. Anyway, you're right. But yeah. But this chart alone, this right here, prima facie evidence of murder right here. Has anybody gone to jail for that? No, they probably got knighted. I'm not kidding. Right.
Yeah,
they probably did. But there it is in one chart showing the complete lie of the COVID situation. Right. And that happened in New York State. And then New York Democrats got together and said, you know, let's put Cuomo up as the best person we can put up against this radical Marxist guy.
Mm-hmm.
It was these crazy ideas.
I know.
And then they all voted for the radical Marxist guy because I guess murder was a bridge too far. Who knows?
So,
but this is the world we live in.
You think he's going to get it though?
I don't know. But if he does, easy prediction.
Are there enough people that would vote?
New York City continues its slippery slope towards this disaster that we're looking at right here. But the point is that this ideology that the UK is kind of like an ultra blue state to me at this point. You can't have guns, total nanny state. You get in trouble if you say the wrong thing, bad tweet. You're not even allowed to stand silently praying. Like they've just like they don't want you to be white.
There's no freedom.
And they don't want you to have any freedom or autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want you to have any self-agency. You can't protect yourself. When you are not allowed to protect yourself, they've stripped away the most fundamental right there is.
Right.
Which is the right to protect yourself from being harmed.
Right. A right to decide for your own body.
So you have no rights in the UK, including up to the right to live, if they decide it's time as a state-sanctioned program to kill you. That's what this is.
It's time to go.
This is state-sanctioned murder right here. Okay, fine.
Wow.
That's what the blue states want to introduce at this point in time. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Overwhelmingly. I'm not saying the red states are all that in a bag of rocks. Maybe, you know, they're just perfect. But can we at least agree there's an ideology out there? It's about death and destruction.
Yeah.
This is who they are.
That's right.
Right. So carrying on is an example of this, though. I don't think there was anybody creepier to me than this Jacinda Ardern lady from the Prime Minister of New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was anybody creepier. So she was just on this show recently, and we're going to listen in. This is part of her resurrection tour, which is being filmed overseas because she's really disliked in her home country in such a severe way. They don't dare like show a video of her walking down the street because it would be ugly. But at any rate,
really?
Listen in.
Or we have the option of blaming others, of saying that the cause of the insecurity you feel or the financial insecurity you feel is this group or this group. And that is a quick and easy way to do politics. Incite fear. It's the oldest trick in the book, but it is the most harmful and the most damaging. And I talk openly about the alternative.
Well, she used the oldest trick in the book as a routine order of business.
Right. I'm a little confused here.
I know. You're like,
what?
Why? Isn't this like being given dating tips by, Harvey Weinstein? This is awkward, right? Like she's giving us a lecture in political morality, and she was the most politically immoral person I know about.
Right.
And of course, Oprah Winfrey is like a highly questionable human being to me at this stage, given all the other stuff we know about at this stage. But anyway, let's carry on. You're right. This is confusing.
It's because they exist. There are leaders who champion empathetic leadership, who actually want to solve the problems. But what we see a spotlight more often is that alternative. And I wish so much that we can turn towards those more optimistic, hopeful, and inclusive responses to problems, rather than the fear that we see people reach to.
Rather than the fear that we see people reach to. Mm-hmm. Okay, Jacinda, let's go into your history here real quick.
So you basically said this is going to be like, well, it's almost like, you probably don't see it like this, the two different classes of people. If you're vaccinated or if you're unvaccinated, you have all these rights. If you are vaccinated.
That is what it is. So, yep. Yep.
So.
Yep. Yep. So you basically said you have these two classes of people, vaccinated, unvaccinated, right? Yeah. She's like, yep.
That is what it is.
Yep. That is what it is. So two classes of people divided by fear. She was happy about it at the time. Now she's trying her little PR recovery tour to pretend like she's some shining example of empathy and all of that. But that's creepy.
So you basically said this is going to be like, well, it's almost like, you probably don't see it like this, the two different classes of people. If you're vaccinated or if you're unvaccinated, you have all these rights. If you are vaccinated.
That is what it is. So, yep.
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 You have all these rights if you're vaccinated. And you don't have rights if you're unvaccinated. Yep. Yep. She said, yep. Oh, by the way, this lady.
The most up-to-date information.
Hold up. Too loud for my ear. They all have different volumes on them. So just one. Here we go. Let's try that again. Back it up.
The most up-to-date information daily. You can trust us as a source of that information. You can also trust the Director General of Health and the Ministry of Health. For that information, do feel free to visit at any time to clarify any rumour you may hear, covid19.govt.nz. Otherwise, dismiss anything else. We will continue to be your single source of truth. We will provide information frequently.
We will continue to be your single source of truth, which, of course, perversely, all turned out to be non-truthful, completely full of crap and complete bunk, and which is why she's very much persona non grata in her own country. It was all lies.
Did you hear the background sound? It sounded like people were like protesting out there.
Didn't listen in.
In the background, I could just hear this like sounded like shouting or something like that.
We will be your single source of truth, right? She says. So you'll be pleased to know this, though, Evie, that it turned out once the dust settled that they did give out exemptions to the COVID vaccination.
No.
Mm-hmm.
11,000 politicians and elites, of course, received an exemption for the COVID vaccination. This is shocking. All right, that makes me angry.
It was an open government act. It was a FOIA. It was a FOIA request. They had to pry it out of their hands because, you know, the single source of truth, right? 11,000 politicians, a member. Says Michael Ray Griffin, Gray Griffin, who I've interviewed with before, an interview with Dr. Paul Oosterhuis, who a good friend, and Liz Gunn. So I've known these people, and they had to FOIA it out. 11,000, they gave themselves vaccine exemptions, lectured us on the truth, and now she's on this tour going, oh, you know, right. We need more leaders who can do it with empathy, you know, not dividing by fear. Right. We should divide by elite status. Obviously,
if you're rich money, enough,
you can dodge the death jab. Right. And if you're not rich enough, you don't get to dodge it. That's fair.
Right.
That's literally who this person is. She is a disgusting human being. And for Oprah Winfrey to platform her just tells you the kind of person you got there. Right. No, she Oprah Winfrey.
She was lapping it up.
Yeah. Not like going, whoa, Jacinda. Let me gather a couple of clips because what you just said is not who you just were. Did you do an ayahuasca experience and have a hero's dose of mushrooms? Like, what changed? Right? Must be something, right?
Yeah.
So let's listen in on Jacinda and climate change, because this to me strips bare, Evie, the ethos of the utopias. The utopians say everybody, it's not sufficient. It's not sufficient that you just sort of do what we say. You have to believe. Worse, even more, you have to like what they are doing. Like, they insist on complete obedience. You have to be in their tribe.
Right.
And the only way we can get to utopia is if everybody believes the same thing. Right?
Right.
So here she goes explaining that ideology. This is in front of the UN talking about New Zealand and compliance.
This week we launched an initiative alongside companies and nonprofits to help improve research and understanding of how a person's online experiences are curated by automated processes. This will also be important in understanding more about mis- and disinformation online, a challenge that we must, as leaders, address. As leaders, we're rightly concerned that even the most light-touch approaches to disinformation could be misinterpreted as being hostile to the values of free speech that we value so highly. But while I cannot tell you today what the answer is to this challenge, I can say with complete certainty that we cannot ignore it. To do so poses an equal threat to the norms we all value.
Oh, you know, we obviously, free speech, very important. But on the other hand, we can't just have that. So we have to strike a balance, which I think favors us, right? It's just, it's so, it, there is no but after free speech. There's no, like,
no,
you know, free speech is important, but there's no but. There's no but on it.
Nope, there can't be.
Because rights don't have conditions, right? If it's a conditional right, it's not a right, it's a privilege. So she's here trying to weasel word her way into this idea.
Yeah, she is.
That free speech is really a conditional, provisional privilege.
Right.
It's granted by the government to the peons.
Right.
Who unfortunately had to take the death jab.
She's a WEF puppet person, isn't she?
Yeah, she's a young global leader. You say puppet person, let's get it right.
That's what I mean, though.
Tell you. After all, how do you successfully end a war if people are led to believe the reason for its existence is not only legal, but noble? How do you tackle climate change if people do not believe it exists? How do you...
There it is. How do you tackle climate change if people believe it doesn't exist? Well, I'll tell you how you do this, Jacinda. It's really not hard. What you do is you ignore the people who don't think it exists. You show us that you can build a better system, right? Using wind towers and solar panels, you just do it. And because it's obviously better and you know it works, right? You build the better system. And then people see that and they go, oh, I'd be happy to live in a clean, tidy environment. The problem is that it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Alternative energy is not fit for purpose. You can't run a complex, complicated, just-in-time global economic model with a lot of elites with 400-foot yachts using windmills and solar panels. They're nice, but they're not center stage. They have good supporting lines to deliver on in the Broadway act, but they're not the lead actor or actress in the story. Can't be. Just intermittency, whole complicated story. So she doesn't say ever here. Notice what she's not saying. Look, we've already proven that we can have just as good, if not a better life under this new model. Nope, that's not what she said. What she said was this. Back it up tiny bit.
If people are led to believe the reason for its existence is not only legal, but noble, how do you tackle climate change if people do not believe it exists?
How do you tackle climate change if some people, doesn't believe it exists? So this is the utopian mindset. The utopian mindset is very simply, we can't get to utopia until everybody believes.
Right.
Remember? But this was the same thing. Like, my shot doesn't work unless you've had your shot.
Like, right.
Well, then the shots don't work.
Like, wait, what?
What? It was like the stupidest thing ever. You know, we don't get to herd immunity until everybody has the shot.
Right.
Like,
you must participate.
It's not how it worked just a few years ago and for all of human history.
Such crap.
But that is the mentality of the of the utopias. Like, it won't work unless everybody's on board, which is why they have to exterminate everybody. Right. This is how it goes.
Yep.
The utopias move in, the Marxists, right, the Trotskyites, right, they move in and they say, look, we have this better vision, but unfortunately there's some people who don't believe in this vision.
Right.
So we're going to have to get rid of them. In Cambodia, that was anybody with glasses or anybody they thought was intellectual. They like retarded their whole country by killing their most intelligent people, so they didn't breed, right, in the future. Oh, in other countries, it was the Christians, right, because the Christians sit there and go, you know, no, I've got a God already. I'm good. And they're like, well, that's no good, because until we have everybody believing in the state,
right,
it won't work. It's right. That whole utopianist idea, until everybody agrees with me 100%, this thing I want can't come true.
Right. And I think that's why the United States was such an interesting experiment, right? Because it was the idea of bringing people together from all different backgrounds and people having the right to practice whatever religion they wanted to believe in whatever God or gods they wanted to to have that freedom. And now I think we're actually on the brink of that teetering in the other direction and going away.
Yep.
Because of the choices we're making.
Well, it has a flavor of this, right?
This is a world takeover by communists.
I think you're right. Yes, it's
yes.
Yep. And there's a whole this is who, you know, Jacinda was referring to. And she's like, oh, we have so many beautiful, empathetic leaders now.
Right.
Trudeau, Macron.
Von der Leyen.
All right. That is our show for today, Evie. You got something to land this plane?
I do. Bring it home.
Put this thing on the ground.
It's called Try to Praise the Mutilated World. Try to praise the mutilated world. Remember June's long days and wild strawberries, drops of rosé wine, the nettles that methodically overgrow the abandoned homesteads of exiles. You must praise the mutilated world. You watched the stylish yachts and ships. One of them had a long trip ahead of it, while salty oblivion awaited others. You've seen the refugees going nowhere. You've heard the executioners sing joyfully. You should praise the mutilated world. Remember the moments when we were together in a white room and the curtain fluttered. Return in thought to the concert where music flared. You gathered acorns in the park in autumn and leaves eddied over the earth's scars. Praise the mutilated world and the gray feather a thrush lost and the gentle light that strays and vanishes and returns.
Beautiful. Thank you for that. And thank you, everybody, for being here today. That is our signal hour. We are completely pleased to say, well, adios, amigos. Thank you so much for being here with us, everybody. It's been absolutely wonderful. Thank you. We'll be back next Wednesday.
Stay cool. Take good care of yourselves and each other. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
All right. Bye, everyone.